Welcome to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah, an IFS-informed trauma recovery coach. This show features interviews from guests all around the world as they share their impactful stories and deliver hope and inspiration through their personal post-traumatic growth. We explore and discuss resources and coping strategies to support the survivor community to thrive in their own healing journeys. Enjoy. So welcome back to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah. I have with me today, Reverend Nathan Kohlerman. Nathan is a devoted father, transformational alchemist, leadership consultant, speaker, writer, minister, co-host of the Activate Intention podcast, and the founder of New Intention. He has a diverse background in transpersonal psychology, integrative somatic therapy, metaphysics, mysticism, ritual, plant medicine, and shamanic sexual healing. After being introduced to gang culture and battling addiction at a young age, Nathan felt he was on a path to self-destruction. Looking for a new path for his life, he served honorably with the U.S. military for over 5 years. This time ignited his passion for wellness, health, and fitness. He had hopes of serving in special ops, but was unexpectedly medically discharged. Feeling lost in life and with two children to support, he explored his passions for physical fitness as a personal trainer. Shortly after, he suffered a traumatic and debilitating hand injury, which left him again feeling helpless and hopeless. Just a few years ago, as he was contemplating even taking his own life, a client invited him to a transformational healing training, which he considered divine intervention. So that turning point was in 2017. It brought him here to where he is today as the founder of New Intention Method, which is a connective, holistic, and sustainable model of transformation. This serves as the structure for heart-led humans, purpose-driven leaders, those who are looking to awaken their inner wisdom, their greatness, and fulfill their soul's purpose. Nathan, thank you so much for being here today with us. I love this story. Tell us a little bit more. Let's just jump right in. So we started with gang culture and addiction, and now you are a minister with the Church of Wisdom. You're a psycho-spiritual healer and leader. How did we get here?
Yeah, and thank you for having me, Sarah. So as we know, people don't just stumble upon those things. There's normally a lot of accumulated experiences over time. So whether it was trauma sustained in the womb, which there very much was, to darker events in my childhood, ones that I can't remember because I was at just very young ages and I heard stories of them, and my older siblings will share those with me. And it's been pretty challenging to package all of it up with a bow. And the easiest way I've been able to explain it is that it's just been darkness from the womb to birth to moving into the education system and moving through bullying and not having any real friends until about 14 years old. And conveniently, my parents split at that time. And I was looking for family. So being a martial artist since I was five, I could fight really well. I hit a growth spurt and I started taking out my anger on everyone and everything that I could. So after countless numbers of fights and whatnot, I started attracting attention from the right, but also wrong crowds, because at the time I really needed family. I needed community. And you know, the gang culture provided that. Despite the trade-offs, which involved numerous acts of abuse and numerous acts of violence, it brought me to the place where I started, you know, buying, flipping, and selling drugs. You know, started with MDMA, then it moved into cocaine, then from cocaine, then I started experimenting with heroin and got deeply addicted to heroin in my late 16 era. And to support that addiction, I started selling it. And then I started getting into more, I guess, chaotic scenes and environments, things that I wouldn't really wish anyone to see, whether it was sitting outside of a cartel member's house or just being in a room with multiple people doing multiple drugs. And it was just a hard even environment to even convey properly, or to paint that portrait properly. I mean, So my mom's sister sat me down and reached out for help, you know, shortly after I got shot at. And that kind of rattled me a little bit. So I wanted to seek help for that.
Yeah.
And they sat me down, told me I was either going to be dead or in prison, of course, because they care. And then the next week I went back to school. There were recruiters on the front doorstep. And I walked up and told them, was really brutally honest, like, I'm kind of fucking up in life and I need some help. What can you do for me? And they said, stop by the office. So I go to the office, start filling out the papers, and they're like, okay, rip the contract. They said, now write everything you just did, just do the exact opposite.
Wow.
So yeah, which is definitely shunned, right? Because it's definitely not so much in alignment or congruent with the rules of life by any means.
Right.
But that's what they saw that I needed. Mm-hmm. And by April 2010 is when I signed the papers, graduated from high school May 2010, turned 18 July 2010, left for basic in August 2010. So in that 4-month period, I got clean. I did everything that I needed to do to leave, ended up graduating from high school, which was a huge accomplishment since I missed like a year and a half due to being kicked out and expelled and going to 4 different schools. And the military was a great thing until it wasn't a great thing because inside the military, as many know, and also many don't know, it's very culturally oppressive, very, you know, authoritarian based, I would say. It's very regimented in will of the army versus will of the self, right, which has its own control and manipulation dynamics that happen inside of it. Mm-hmm. Exactly why there's a whole portion of the army that's dedicated to psychological warfare. Right. And I loved it for a good amount of time, and I'm so thankful for it, right? I, you know, got married, I ended up getting divorced, I had my daughter, I met my son's mother right afterwards, and I had my son. And I wanted to do a lot of great things. I wanted to go be a special operator. I wanted to be, you know, the military poster boy. You know, I wanted to be seen in that way because I just had a deep longing for wanting to feel important, which I never really did. Mm-hmm. So I pursued all of these accolades and achievements and these external, you know, measures of success and worth just to come to a point where I pushed myself so hard for that success that my body and my mind started like shutting down. So they put me out at 24 years old, primarily for compartment syndrome in both my legs for just pushing myself really hard, along with 31 other diagnoses around mental health, physical health, you name it. So they pushed me out 100% disabled, permanently and totally, essentially told me that there's not really any hope for you here. And because you don't want to get surgery, you're going to have to live with this for the rest of your life. There was a lot of medical gaslighting that had happened in that time. And that came with the diagnoses, that came with the multitude of prescription pills they wanted to put me on. And if it weren't for fitness, because I was competing professionally at the time in bodybuilding, then I don't know how I would have responded. And I probably would have taken all those pills. But I knew deep down that my health lived in holistic lifestyle, you know, applications, whether it was nutrition or fitness or nature or anything else that falls in that category. I pursued that. So I got out, started working as a personal trainer, even though I was, you know, permanently and totally disabled. And it wasn't easy. I was also 242 pounds at the time and walking around with like 6% body fat, just armored and layered from head to toe. And that was a really interesting time in my life because exercise and working out and bodybuilding was a great way for me to conceal the pain that I felt on the inside. And it was a way for me to stay protected because if I was big enough, if I was strong enough, if I looked intimidating enough, then nobody would ever mess with me again. And that's kind of how I lived a majority of my life up until about 25. And then my hand injury, where I leaned on a granite counter, snapped off one day, ripped my whole hand open, four tendons, artery, nerve, 7 months of rehab, about $250,000 in surgery. And that was the moment that you talked about in the bio where I was holding a gun in my hand and got a call. And she invited me to Landmark, which is more of a leadership and emotional intelligence program where I started learning the language of stories and, you know, you're creating your reality and you're the one who's responsible for your life. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, what? Like, I was kind of like flabbergasted for a bit. And then, of course, over the years with where I'm at now, it's just been going as deep as I can into myself through non-traditional means. Because there is like the traditional Western, you know, talk therapy and pharmaceuticals is the primary go-to. And for me, I wanted to explore other pathways. And I ended up getting into breath work around 2018. I started studying metaphysical healing. And I actually went to a metaphysical healing university in Georgia called Delphi. And I did their transpersonal therapist program. And was ordained under the church that is, you know, supporting the mission of the university where they primarily teach mediumship, transpersonal psychology, psychic art therapy. So even expressive therapy through the psychic and mediumship lens. And of course, I've just stumbled upon thing after thing after thing and studying integrative somatic therapies and other modalities that can help someone heal, you know, from the inside out has been the game changer for me, really. And whether plant medicine was involved or not, all of these things that led up to these, you know, this place has been just to try to feel normal, like I can actually function in society. Because for a really long time, I would say even up until about 2018, 2019, I didn't feel like a functioning member of society. I actually hated humanity. Mm-hmm. So to go from hating humanity and feeling nothing but pain and misery to now loving people where they're at, while also not tolerating mediocrity, mm-hmm. it's been really beautiful to walk in the shoes of someone who appreciates wellness and how it impacts leadership and how necessary and crucial it is, especially right now in this time in society and what humanity really needs to be a voice, you know, for those who haven't discovered theirs yet, or an advocate for people that don't know that there are places to heal. There are things available outside of the spectrum that we were taught.
Your whole bio, a little bit more detail about some of the things that you've been through on your website. The thing that caught my attention was the way that you seemed to be so connected to your body. So you're talking about like when your mom and your sister sat you down, what that felt like in your body. And when you saw the recruiters, when you first saw them and you knew your whole life was going to change, when you were invited to the transformational training, you kind of like detail some of the things that were happening in your body. Were you just always really connected to what you were experiencing somatically?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been a very highly sensitive person.
Yeah.
HSP, right? And I was also in martial arts when I was 5 years old. My mom actually put me in martial arts because of my dad, you know. She said that if I'm ever not around, I want you to be able to protect yourself if you need to.
Yeah.
And I had like 12 years martial arts background. I wrestled in high school, football, So of course I'd find bodybuilding and fitness and, you know, even now in the somatic work, right? It's all kind of been this 25-year journey of being in my body and knowing that being in my body has always felt the safest for me. Because when I'm in my mind, that's when the suicidal ideations would happen. I noticed that when I was in my mind, that's where I started becoming anxious. I started then feeling depressed because I started thinking about all the things that I should be sad about. And the only place I could ever be safe was in my body, because when I was in my body, I was present, I was aware, and no one could come near me, because if they did, like, I'd put them on the ground, you know, and that's always been the thing for me. And I've had to also work on that a lot, to not always be in fight or flight, always ready for the fight, or what I'm going to do if somebody comes too close to me. And that, of course, has had its impact, you know, relationally, for sure. So yeah, being in the body has always been really important to me. And I know that's not the same case for many.
It is really interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting to hear. You just said, I always felt safer in my body because when I got into my mind, that's where the issues were. And that, as you know, is the exact opposite of a lot of trauma survivors. You are kind of the exact inverse, which of course can happen. It just, that's, you're in the minority there, which is really beautiful. And I knew that I recognized that when I was reading your bio, and I was like, how are you like in gang culture and your mom's sitting you down and you're recognizing what's happening in your body, right? Like it, that really, really struck me. So that is, that's really interesting and a great, you know, way for you to continue into these therapies in your body, but also while working on the mentality shift of it, where it's usually the other side of that. So yeah, I acknowledge you for that. When we express our authenticity, we no longer have to suppress who we are. So tell us more about that. And how is that possible? How is that available for trauma survivors?
I think what happens for a lot of people is that we identify with it, right? We identify with what had happened, and we identify with the story and also the sensations that come from that experience. And over time, it progressively layers, right? Disease doesn't happen overnight. It's accumulated, right? And then it's intensified. Then it's, you know, localized. And we start seeing how this stuff manifests in the body, how stress manifests in the body, inflammation, you know, autoimmune, very common with trauma survivors. Because it's almost like when this thing happened, the who I was cannot be anymore because of this thing, because this thing happened. So because in that moment, someone didn't have the resources or the ability to process it fully, and therefore became trauma in the body. When we start to remove the layers and we get back to the who you really are, right? The who I really am. When this thing doesn't live inside of me anymore, and when this thing doesn't get in the way of how I show up in the world, how I express myself, how I articulate myself, how I portray who I am to others, because that's the other aspect.
Right.
It's almost like so many trauma survivors will wear a mask to portray the image that everything's okay, because there's a piece or a part that feels like it's not okay to not be okay.
Right. Yeah.
So when I said that, when we're able to express ourselves for who we are authentically, what that means is full permission to be who you are. Right. And when you have full permission to be who you are, you no longer have to continue writing the narrative of the story of who you once were when something had happened, or who you have to be in order to feel safe around others again. So once those pieces start to come together, and of course, it's more about removing, as we know, right? When people are healing, it's about removing the layers and finding out what's underneath. It's not about stacking more stories or more modalities or more narratives on top of the narratives, because that's just now confusion, right? Yeah. Quite literally, to have things tangled is really the etymology of it. So when we start unwinding, untangling, removing the layers, we really get down to the true aspect of the self, the authentic self, and then get to experience what it's like to then express what the true authentic nature of oneself is, without shame, without blame, without judgment, without remorse or regret, without pain. Because so much of our society doesn't know what it feels like to feel good anymore, because they've been feeling bad for so long that it's just become normal.
Yeah.
And this is something that we were talking about earlier, right? It's taken me 30 years to just feel, quote unquote, normal, or at least what I perceive to be normal.
Right. Right. Content, at least peaceful, inner peace, and figuring out who you are and getting back to a place where you can at least maintain and self-manage and self-regulate. That's kind of the goal. I think that's what I consider kind of normal, you know, but you know, I don't know, is anyone really normal? I suppose no one, but yeah, there has to feel something that feels joy and feels peace and feels connected. Let's jump into my favorite topic. I love this topic, and we could go a million places, but we're going to talk about plant medicine. We could go a million places with plant medicine. If you could give us a little overview, your experience, how you help others in this journey, really anything that you feel would be really an important, most important kind of bits and pieces about plant medicine for the listeners.
Yeah. So with plant medicine, full discretion, it's not for everyone whatsoever. Please do your due diligence. Please do your own research and check in with, you know, because there's this thing that I've been talking about a lot, actually, where there's this thing where we're survivors of trauma and we're wanting to heal. And sometimes we will do anything to feel better, right? I mean, that's addiction, right? Addiction is a solution because it helps us feel the very thing that we don't want to feel.
Right.
And it's kind of the same category, I would say, right? Like, to pursue plant medicine, especially if you have an addictive personality like I do, I have to really check in with that, because I can abuse plant medicine just as much as I abused heroin. Right? Because it's not so much about the abuse as much as it is about what I'm concealing or what I'm navigating, which is why set setting and environment are so important, right? Your mindset, the environment, the situation, the settings, the people around you, all of those things are taken into consideration, because plant medicine is not, to me at least, what Western society is making it out to be. Because I think a lot of the things right now in mainstream media, the focus is on clinical trials, and here's the evidence, here's the data, here's the numbers, which is great because that's the science part. And what I don't feel is being talked about enough here in the US is the spirit part of plants. And plant medicine has its own consciousness. Right? It has its own form of communication, which, just like any other relationship, we have to learn to speak the language of the plant. And as woo-woo as it sounds, right? When you have, you know, let's say a mushroom in your hand, and you just hold it and you bring it with you to pray every day, you're now communicating with it, whether it's directly to it or just with it in your hand. Because it's not so much about, well, how do I speak mushroom? It's in the presence, or in, as I hold this mushroom, do I feel more intention, right? What else do I feel in my body as I pray? Because if it's something different than what I'm normally used to feeling, then that is the consciousness of the plant infusing in you to then experience it through your practice, right? And then you can also, of course, have a practice under the influence with a microdose or something like that, right? I love to microdose and do breath work because it increases the amount of sensations in my body. And if I know and if I feel that I'm stressed, I know that sometimes it's okay to have some support, especially if I start to move into my pattern of dissociation, which is to completely shut off. Yeah. It's the complete opposite of what I want in terms of my outcome. Yeah. So I use it with intention. I use it responsibly. And I understand and familiarize myself with these things. And I've built the relationship to know what the outcomes are. And a lot of it is trial and error, right? And on that note, I should say that with trial and error, it's, you know, slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Yeah.
Right. Because you don't want to go from like a micro dose to a heroic dose in one day, especially if you've never sat with plant medicine. Right. And I've done training through Being True to You, which is a great resource. Mm-hmm. They have an addiction recovery and a psychedelic integration program. Mm-hmm. I've also done some work with Third Wave and the San Francisco Psychedelic Society with their microdosing programs. So the medicine has completely different outcomes, right? This is what I mean by the consciousness of medicine or the consciousness of these plants, because MDMA, which is not a plant, it's actually a derivative of a plant. Same thing with LSD, derivative of a fungi, and then synthetically altered. But with like mushrooms or ayahuasca or Lachuma, San Pedro, any of the mescaline-based medicines, you know, a lot of people are going to these experiences without much preparation. You know, they'll get the email from the retreat center, they'll get the diet, and here's the things you should do, here's the things you shouldn't do. But there's not a lot that involves going deeper into yourself, a little bit more on the introspective preparation, the somatic resourcing preparation. And that's what we talk about in, you know, therapeutic spaces all the time. It's pace and safety. Right? Like the number one aspect of harm reduction and trauma prevention is establish safety and then move at a safe pace. Move at a pace that really honors the size, strength, and support of the organism, the person who is having an experience. And that's not really taken into much consideration. And they're probably more than likely doing it right during these retreats. I hope so, at least. And I feel like there's also a lack in the integration because it's just this conceptualized thing versus tried, true, and proven frameworks that set someone up for success.
Right.
Even by creating an aftercare plan, right? Using a set of diagnostics, you can use the dissociative identity disorder scale, right? Which just measures dissociation. And based on the scoring system, you can determine what practices or what, you know, inner prompts might be good for that person, right? With a proper screen. And it doesn't have to be that, it can be anything, right? Even a simple personality test might be able to tell us a little bit more about where we're at and who we are and how we operate. So that way we can, again, stack these skills with medicine to have a framework for healing and allow the healing to move inside of that framework fluidly. Right? How the water moves within the bottle, right? And a lot of people lack the container. A lot of people lack the water bottle. They just pour all this water out, you know, hoping that some of it will land or fertilize the soil or something, but then the rest of it will evaporate and it's kind of just gone in the ethers. And then you see people start seeking more and more and more and more till you just be reminded of those experiences again and again and again and again, you know, and that's what I've seen, whether it's someone going to breathwork sessions every weekend or a mushroom ceremony every month or ayahuasca 52 times in 1 year. And it's like, what are we chasing here, right? What are we seeking, right? Because the other misconception I feel in the plant medicine space is that the medicine calls you, not the other way around. Right. And if there's a forcing or a pushing, going towards that, then I would say maybe explore what that is before you commit to something to that degree.
Yeah.
Just to have a stronger base or a stronger foundation of what's to come. Yeah. Right. But if you've done a good amount of work and you're like, no, I feel really good about this and it is pulling me, right? That's completely different. A push versus a pull. It's a different energy.
Very different.
You know, and to learn that energy first, learn those dynamics first before going into a medicine ceremony is really important. The spirit side of medicine and the spirit side, the ceremony, the ritual, the reverence of what this medicine is designed to do, what it was really intended to do from the birth of it, wherever it was from, right? Because medicine has different lineage and it has different land that it grows on. And, you know, the indigenous cultures who, you know, and the indigenous people who grew and, you know, maintained and cultivated and put love into that land and love into that medicine. And it's different here. All right. The way I've seen, you know, people move in the Amazonian jungle, for instance, you know, and the way they move in their family systems, the way they harvest the plant medicine, the amount of intention, the amount of reverence, the amount of, you know, care that goes into it far supersedes the US. Supersedes it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this stuff, we'll say, has been around a lot longer than us, I'm pretty sure. Right. So it's like, if we can't commune with these plants, then it's just another form of colonization, really. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of in Western society. You know, a lot of this stuff is being colonized for use, right? And not to say that it's not intended to be used for healing, because it 100% is. I just don't hear enough of how we're giving back to the land, or how we're giving back to the plants, how we're communing and having more intention with this outside of a clinical environment. And it's even to question if that part is being introduced into a clinical environment or not, because even that would skew the results, I would say. Right. But if someone was really to have more of the integrative approach versus just the medical approach, then I feel like people would have much more powerful outcomes.
Nathan, we always like to ask everyone, in your healing journey, because obviously now you are giving back and you are a healer and a leader in this healing community, but when you were in your journey, what was maybe just one or two of the most catalytic healing resources, the tools that you used that were so helpful for your transformation?
Yeah. So two come to mind. First one being breath work, which has always been just something I've loved to offer, loved to serve. It's something I more often than not introduce people to the deeper work with, because it's manageable, right? It's manageable. You can have a sense of control if that's what you might struggle with.
Yeah.
It is both a conscious and unconscious practice, right? So it's more holistic. It's something that we can feel every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's something as simple as just taking one big breath every 5-10 minutes or a whole hour journey. It's really customizable based on what someone needs. And it's the most accessible and versatile technique, right?
Yeah.
And the second one is catharsis work, because catharsis is, as we know, very intense bouts of screaming or emotional, physical discharge. And I feel it's important to have a flexible nervous system, right? We talked about self-regulation. And that's what like breath work can help with. And I also feel like it's very important to have a strong and resilient nervous system, because resiliency has been kind of shunned in we'll call it the healing community, because there's this toxic perception of resilience, like, oh, you have to be resilient, which means you have to be strong, you have to ball it up. But the resiliency that I'm talking about is the ability to develop emotional range, right? Like, so many people want to scream but have no idea where to go, right? And some people have never experienced that, right? To where they don't get to maybe feel what's underneath all that catharsis, because there's always something underneath it.
Sure.
Right. Especially anger. Yeah. Right. So, like, rage release work, right? Conscious rage release work, mindful rage release work. Yeah. Right. If you hear this and you're like, I'm gonna go scream into my pillow as loud as I can for 20 minutes, I would maybe take a pause and check in with the authentic expression of it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, catharsis can be dance. Catharsis can be screaming. Catharsis can be ridiculous amounts of giggles until you're crying and peeing your pants. And now you're crying for another reason because of a memory or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel like those two things, right? There's breath work, which promotes flexibility and, you know, self-awareness and self-regulation. And then there's the catharsis, which is more of the range. It's the strength. It's the capacity that you're building, right? Because that's the main thing I see in big breathwork experiences right now, especially, is that people go to breathwork with this expectation that they're going to have this transcendental or emotionally glorifying experience, just to go in and realize, like, oh, I was not ready, you know, because a lot of people are exceeding their threshold before they even begin to discover it. And then they actually get re-traumatized in these experiences because they're not factoring in their experience on top of other people in the room, which is secondary, right? And then also genetically hereditary, which is tertiary, because we have three levels of trauma here.
Yeah.
And all those things aren't really considered. So having something to build your capacity, to increase your threshold, to develop strength with proper resourcing, right? Emotional resourcing is a prerequisite, in my opinion, to a lot of this work. That's like one of the first things that we can do to get into our body is to start working with catharsis, right? Authentic catharsis.
Yeah.
And like, throw on some music, dance your face off as hard as you can for 10 minutes. That's catharsis,
yeah.
Right? Put on some drumming music, scream in a pillow until you feel something. Cool. You feel something now? Perfect. We got there.
Yeah.
Right. We don't need to blow the gaskets off of a society that's already addicted to adrenaline and dopamine.
Right.
We need to equip ourselves with the tools to feel what it is we want to feel, right? Or what we are ready to feel, because there's a difference.
Right.
I want to feel something, but I'm not ready to. So I'm going to force myself to. And now, boom, here comes all the drama, the shame, the blame, everything else that comes with it. So breath work and catharsis.
I love that. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate those resources. I will have those listed in our show notes below. Tell people where they can find you. Where can they hear more about working with you, connect with you, your socials, plug away.
Cool. Thank you. And thank you so much again for having me on. And thank you everyone for listening. Again, my name is Nathan Kohlerman. You can find that on all platforms. It's just at my full name. It'll be in the notes. And then my website is newintention.com, which is N-E-U, intention.com. And I have events, programs. I've got a cohort coming up, a group program coming up in June. I also am a co-founder for a leadership academy where we teach a 60-hour somatic leadership training, as well as a couple other interesting things that I'm working on. So
awesome. Great. Nathan Kohlerman, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing your story. I just want to honor and acknowledge all the work that you are doing healing this trauma survivor community. You're doing great work. Keep it up. Thank you so much. Thanks, have a great Sarah. Rest of your day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening or watching this episode of Trauma Survivorhood. For more info, show notes, and links, check out the episode guide below. Until next time, be well, survivors.